is and has been for many years. Lose weight, exercise, you know, get in shape, some form. And yet every year they tell us as Americans we are getting fatter and more out of shape. So evidently, even if we do make the resolution, we're not paying a lot of attention to it. They were still talking about New Year's resolutions this morning on the news, and they were talking about getting in shape, and that was what they were discussing about how to stay true to your resolutions and what kind of health and exercise resolutions to make. And I gave Tinsy the controllers and let her change it to cartoons while they were talking about that. And so, you know, I just don't know how much attention we pay to resolutions, but I want to challenge you this morning to make three. To look at a story in the Gospel of Mark, it's also in Matthew, of a lady, I think, who gives us a great example, who shows us some things that honestly really are not New Year's resolutions, but should be Christian revolutions, should be things that that we dedicate ourselves to, that we are committed to year-round. And I believe if we would, they have the potential to revolutionize our life and those around us. As I thought about this passage and I thought about these three lessons, I said at the early service this morning that if we would even half-heartedly make these resolutions, if we would even just, just kind of so-so commit ourselves to it, it would be revolutionary in the church, in our homes, in our families, and ultimately in our nation. And so this morning, as we look at this passage in Mark, there are quite a few lessons. This is a great story. And as we look this morning, I'm not doing it justice. We don't have time. You wouldn't stay here long enough, and I would be out of voice by the time we discussed everything that can be learned from the story in Mark chapter 5 of the woman with the issue of blood. But I do think there are three key things that that God has called our attention to this morning that I want to challenge you, I want to invite you, encourage you to consider to make part of your New Year's resolutions, your Christian resolutions, your everyday resolutions. If you're not familiar with the story, let me paraphrase it for you just a little bit and expand it just a little bit, make a few comments about this story before we actually look at these three lessons that I believe God wants us to see this morning. Jesus is making one of his if he was Australian, I think they would call him walkabouts. Jesus is just out walking about the community. Him and his disciples, and a crowd is beginning to follow him, and they are going along behind him. And the Bible tells us that there is a woman that has an issue of blood for 12 years. Now, there is some debate, some discussion about exactly what an issue of blood means. I don't know that really that it's that important, other to say that in some way this lady had a hemorrhage of some type. For all we know, she was a, as we call them today, free bleeders. We don't know, somebody might have socked her in the nose 12 years ago and it was still bleeding. We don't know. We just know that, for sure, she had some issue. I don't know that the very nature of the issue, is the point, but that she had had it, for 12 years. I don't know that it matters, what it is. If it's been going on for 12 years, it's time for it to stop. I don't care if it's the hiccups, whatever it is, if it's been, if I've just been walking along behind you going, it probably won't take 12 years. That will get old, And so whatever it was, this woman had had this issue for 12 years. And so the Bible then goes on, and I love verse 26 because how many of you have heard the phrase, the more things change, the more they stay the same? Verse 26 is a real enlightenment about the medical profession. And so it tells us something there about her circumstance. This issue that she's had has been going going on for 12 years. And notice what it says in verse 26. It says, she had suffered many things of many physicians. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Some of you can probably identify with that statement. This lady had tried a lot of different doctors. And I love that word. I'm sorry for her, but I love the word that it uses there. Here's a sick lady that has suffered. And you know, it's interesting that if you look at it, it doesn't say she suffered because of the issue. It just says she had an issue. It says she suffered at the hands of the doctors. You know, that her suffering came at the hands of many doctors and many kinds of cures. And, you know, I've thought about that. What exactly does that mean? You know, they've drained her dry. They've tried everything, every, you know, wild idea imaginable to try to cure her. And, you know, she's went from one doctor to the next and from this doctor to this doctor. And they've all tried the latest, the greatest, this new medicine that's out. Some of y'all know what she went through, right? Okay. And so she's been there. It's kind of funny. In studying, I came across one Jewish historian who wrote down and documented kind of what the method of treatment would be for someone who was hemorrhaging, someone who had an issue of blood. You know, the first treatment, it was laid out. You know, this is the first thing we try. This is the second, the third, the fourth. You know, if this doesn't work, we move on to this. If this doesn't work, we move on to this. If this doesn't, you know, and there were the steps of treatment for someone with an issue of blood. And kind of to give you an idea of what it talks about when it says she has suffered many things at the hands of many physicians. If I'm not mistaken, it was the third step. If the first two didn't work, may have been the fourth, I don't remember. But to kind of give you an indication of where medicine was and what it means when she suffered many things at the hands of many physicians. When they got to it was the third or fourth step, the lady was to go out and sit down at the fork of the road. It goes downhill from there, folks. She was to go out and sit down at the fork of the road. And she was to have in her hands a conglomeration of herbs and weeds and, you know, let me tell you something. Most of you in here are old enough to have seen or at least seen reruns of the Beverly Hillbillies. Do you remember Granny's medicine bag? These treatments make Granny look like Einstein, okay? Sit down at the fork of the road and hold a bunch of herbs and this kind of stuff. Seemed like maybe one of them was even to be made into a tea. And while she was sitting at the fork of the road, someone was to come up behind her and scare her. And if that didn't cure her issue of blood, we moved on to the next step. And it went downhill from there. So when they say this lady suffered many things at the hands of many physicians, you don't have a clue compared to what this lady had been through. She had been through the mill for 12 years. And notice this. Again, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And spent all that she had. I guess we can blame it on the politics and Obamacare and everybody else. But again, even before the government got involved in health care, things weren't much better. This lady suffered many things at the hands of many physicians and spent all that she had. And notice this, and to make it worse, and was nothing bettered. Anybody ever been to that doctor? Many things at the hands of many physicians, no better, spend everything you had. And in fact, look at the last words of the verse. Not only was she no better, but rather grew worse. Been to that? A lot of you shaking your heads. You've been to those doctors too. And so that's the condition that this woman was in. Well, verse 27 lets us in, and it just kind of gives us a little tiny peek. It doesn't tell us how, it doesn't tell us who, it doesn't tell us what, but some way this woman heard of Jesus. We don't know what she heard of Jesus. We don't know if she heard about Him walking on water, healing the deaf, giving the blind back their sight. We don't know if she heard about Him feeding the hungry. We don't know. We just know that she heard enough about Jesus. We don't know how. We just know that she heard enough about Jesus that she decided, I'm going to go find that man. I'm going to go find this man named Jesus, and I'm going to see him. I've seen many physicians. I've tried many things. I'm broke. I'm worse. I'm going to go and find this man named Jesus. Now, to you and I, we think, well, that makes pretty good sense. That's, you know, that's a logical decision. Well, I want to remind you that, you know, we've got a couple thousand years of history. We've got, the New Testament telling Jesus was kind of the new kid on, you know, he was the new thing. He was the new medicine, on the scene. Not only that, the bigger issue, was the issue of blood. This lady would have been what would be considered to the Jews to be unclean. In other words, because of this issue of blood, she wasn't allowed to be around other people. She would have been considered ceremonially unclean. Now, I know you and I today, you know, in our day of handicapped ramps and things of that nature, you and I hear something like that and we think how crude, how unbelievable that they would take somebody and cordon them off and separate them from society. But I remind you, it wasn't just ceremony, it was sanitary. You know, it was a matter of, you know, didn't know some of the things that you and I know today, didn't have some of the medicines and sanitizers, those kind of things. And so it was really a matter of, you know, if you got a disease, stay home. You know, we don't want it. And so, you know, honestly, it's really not a lot different than what we call, what we do today when somebody's, you know, got the flu. I heard them, in fact, on the news this morning saying, if you've had a fever, stay home for, till your fever's been gone 24 hours. We still do it today. We just don't call it ceremonially unclean. We don't use, you know, those kinds of words. But, this lady, you know, she takes a chance. She says, you know what? You know, I don't care about the consequences. I'm going to find Jesus. And the Bible tells us that she makes up her mind, I don't need to talk to him. I don't need him to come and, you know, to pop me in the forehead and lay hands on me. I don't need him to pray for me. I don't need him to say, if I can just get close enough that I can run up beside him and I can just touch the hem of his garment, that'll be enough. I don't know what this lady heard about Jesus, but this lady got a good feeling about Jesus. If I can just touch, imagine that, if I can just touch just the hem of his garment, that's all that I need. And the Bible tells us she makes up her mind, she pushes her way through the crowd, and sure enough, she runs up and she manages, and somehow as Jesus passes by, just to reach out and to touch his garment. When she does, she notices, the Bible tells us, she didn't have to go to the doctor, she didn't have to go back to one of these many physicians, she knew immediately she was well. The power of God flowed through her and she knew she was well. Jesus turned around and says, you know, and here was the lady's plan, by the way. I'm going to run out and I know I'm unclean, I'm not supposed to be in the crowd. I'm going to run up, I'm going to touch his garment. And as soon as I do, you know, you remember the old cartoons like, you know, the old Looney Tunes and stuff, you know, how when the cartoon guy'd take off to start running, he'd rip his leg around like that, and then, you know, that's supposed to give him a little extra burst of speed. Jason, you sitting there, I know you do. You know, I know I got one Looney Tune fan and one loony in the nut, you know, in the bunch. You know, but they would take that leg and they'd cross it and they'd take off. You know, and I'm almost see that lady. She's, you know, she's gonna go. And about the time she gets started, Jesus turns around and says, "Who touched me?" She's like, "Ooh, caught." You know, caught. And she kind of turns back around and she goes, "Me." And she falls at his feet and begins to worship him. Out of that story, there are three things I want you to see that I think if we will even make a half-hearted commitment to, will transform our life and those around us. Out of that story, there are three great things we learn from this lady who we don't know her name, we've never heard of her before, we don't hear of her again. But we learn three great things from this lady that personally, I can see, I know, would transform my life, your life, our church, our homes, our families, our nations. If the Christians, just a number here this morning, if we would commit ourselves, even half-heartedly, to these three things, would transform our life. First thing I notice about this lady in that story is that she from this story, here's the resolution I want to make that would revolutionize. I want to routinely seek His presence. I want to routinely seek His presence. This woman made up her mind. I'm going to find Jesus. I don't care the cost. I don't care who likes it. I don't care how big the crowd is. I don't care what I have to do. You know, this woman was like a couponer on the Black Friday the day after Thanksgiving. I mean, this woman set up her tent at Jesus' Walmart and said, I'm going to be first in line, and if I'm not, right with the back of the head or whoever's in front of me, I'm getting to Jesus. I am determined. Nothing will stop me. Nothing is going to get in my way. I am going to the front of the line. I'm going to see Jesus today. Yeah, that's just all there is to it. You know, it doesn't matter what else happens. It doesn't matter what else transpires. I don't care who they are or how big they are. I'm going over, under, around, or through somebody till I get to Jesus. What would change in our life? What a transformation it would take in us as individuals, in our church, if we would make up our mind that it doesn't matter who, what, when, or where, I am going to find Jesus. I'm going to seek Jesus every day. I love if you look, the Bible is filled, honestly, with those kinds of statements that it tell us, repeatedly, tell us to seek the face of Jesus, to seek His presence. Over and over, we're told that. And to be honest with you, I think we're told it so much, two things happen. We take them for granted, and honestly, we really don't know what it means. And as I studied that phrase and read what different people wrote about that, about what it means to seek the face, seek the presence of God. I don't know how well this will resonate with everybody, but it really kind of, you know, it was the one that really stuck in my mind. I read a lot of people who had wrote devotion. Not so much commentaries, but just people like Open Windows and those kind of books. People who wrote devotionals about seeking the face of God, seeking the presence of God. And the one that struck me that really kind of, oh yeah, I get it now, hit me was the one who said it means taking our life out of neutral. It means to stop coasting through life. It means to put it in drive and to intentionally steer towards the things of God. And for me, that hit home. Because here's the way I heard that. I have no idea what the author meant. Let me tell you what I heard. Because this is what I see. So many times in life, we get up and we put our life in neutral. And we go through our day, and if we're around a group of people acting one way, we kind of drift with them. You know, if we end up, we get around a group of people talking about the Bible, we drift back over here and we talk about the Bible. And if we get around some people who are telling the latest, crude joke, we drift over here with them. You know, if we get over here around people that don't have, and we just kind of drift through the day, and, you know, when we land it in the evening, we just park it and get out. Yeah, I see that. I think that's, you know, I see that. You know, you look around in church, we see that happening across our nation in churches, the latest, the newest fad, whatever somebody says is true, we just kind of roll through life with the, you know, just go with the flow, whatever, things are different today. I mean, you know, we just kind of coast through life. But to seek the presence of God, Psalm 105, verse 4, Gene Peterson translates it this way. He says that it means this. He translates that verse this way. Keep your eyes open for God, watch for His works, and be alert for signs of His presence. I like that. What would change in our life if every morning, I don't know what time your clock goes off. Some of you, you're retired, you're fortunate, you don't even set the clock. I don't know what time your eyes come open. I don't know what provokes you. You know, what gets you out of bed in the morning. But whatever that is, what would change in our life if the first thing we did when our eyes popped open, when the clock went off, when it was time to get out of bed because it was lunchtime, whatever provokes you, if we would utter this simple prayer, Lord, today, keep my eyes open for You. Help me to see. Help me to watch for your works, and help me to be alert for your presence. And then we went about our day doing that. Let's be brutally honest. Let's be honest here this morning, folks. Most of us get up 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, whatever time. We roll out of bed, and we go about our life. We go all day long, 12, 13 hours later, whatever, 9, 10 o'clock that night, we'll lay our head back down in the bed, and we are no different for God than we were at 7 o'clock that morning. We're no different when we get back in the bed than we were when we got out of it. We have not seen Him. We have not talked to Him. We have not grown in Him. We have not noticed His presence. We have not grown closer to Him. We know no more about His Word. We know no more about His people, about His church, than we did when our eyes popped open, because we did not seek His presence. This woman made a commitment. She said, you know what? No matter what comes, I'm going to find Jesus today. I'm going to see Him today. What would change if we would routinely seek the presence of God? That I want to be more like Him. I want to know more about Him. I want to know more about His Word. If it's only one fact, you know, D.L. Moody made the commitment early in his ministry. He said, every day I'm going to witness to at least one person. At least one person. One night he laid himself down in a bed, if I'm not mistaken, at the YMCA in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And God convicted him. He remembered. He said, you know, I haven't shared the gospel with anybody today. And at 10 o'clock at night, and you're talking about in the 1800s, getting up and going out on the street at 10 o'clock at night, that was unheard of. But he got up and he went out on the streets and he walked till he found somebody and shared the gospel of Jesus Christ with that person. And lo and behold, they accepted the gospel of Jesus Christ and got saved. What if we made a commitment that every day I'm going to seek to be closer to God than when I got up this morning? Let's be honest. We're talking about resolutions. Let's be honest. You know what happens to resolutions. January the 1st, you make a resolution. I'm going to get in shape. I'm going to lose weight. And so you go to the store and you buy you a bag of celery and a pack of carrots, or however carrots come. Y'all can tell how big into that I am. You buy you some carrots and celery, and you run down to the Walmart, and you buy you an exercise bike or something. And what happens? That first day, man, you eat carrots and celery and ride 2 minutes on your new bike. The next day, that old celery looks kind of bad. So I'm going to eat what I want to, but I'll ride 3 minutes on my bike. Well, by the third or fourth day, what happened? That exercise machine has become your closet annex. Be honest. Most exercise equipment ends up being a really good place to hang dirty clothes. Maybe clean, just depends on how ambitious you are. And what happens? Before long, that wonderful decision you had made on the first that you were so committed to, I mean, you went out and bought you a new wardrobe, new shoes, you threw out all the stuff in your cabinets, you bought you all healthy stuff, all those kind of things. Jason said he had never been that resolved in his life. He's over there shaking his head. You'd made all kinds of commitments, and, you know, you'd went out and you'd joined the gym, paid a small fortune to join the gym, and you had made that commitment, and for a day or two, things are going good. And then by the fourth or fifth day, you know, some of you made that kind of gym resolution. I know somebody who's made one, and they're going to go to the gym every morning. Matter of fact, they're getting up, and they're going to gym at 4:30. I figure you're going to have a heart attack getting up at 4:30 trying to get in shape. I wonder what's going to happen the next day or so when it's 8 degrees at 4:30. I don't know, but I have a strange hunch that it's going to be 4:38 degrees, my foot, and I'm going to reset that clock. You know, I'll go back to the gym when it gets warm. By the time it gets warm, listen, let's be honest. Isn't that the way kind of our relationship with God works. We start out, man, we'd tackle hell with a water pistol. But over time, little things trickle in and interfere. What if we resolved, even half-heartedly, to routinely seek His presence? Not only does she seek His presence, second thing I notice in this lady, not only does she seek His presence, but she responded to Him publicly. This may be the biggest issue for us, to be honest. I think about that story. I told you a while ago, I can see her now. She, you know, I can almost picture her reaching out. She's kind of like, when she's kind of already in running position, and she's trying to get that start and still get, you know, touches him, she's going to be gone. Yeah, and so she says, the Bible says she touches the hem, and immediately she knows that she's better, and immediately Jesus knows. And He turns around and He says, "Who touched my clothes?" Now I remind you, Jesus didn't need to know who touched His clothes any more than God needed to know where Adam and Eve were when He walked through the Garden of Eden. He didn't ask for His knowledge or His benefit. He asked the question for her benefit. Because He turns around and He says, "Who touches my clothes?" And I can almost see a face. You know, a kid, or even an adult, that looks like, "Ugh." You know, she's looking around kind of thinking, well, maybe, and even the disciples pipe up and they say, "Jesus, have you lost your mind? Now, look at all these people. Everybody's touched your clothes. You know, what are you talking about? Who touched your clothes?" Better question would be, who hadn't touched your clothes? You know, this is like, you know, trying to get in a football game or, you know, trying to, you know, again, Black Friday at Walmart or whatever. Who touched your clothes? Jesus said, "Oh, somebody was different." And the woman knew who was different. The Bible tells us in that next verse, it says that she looked around and she turned around and I can almost see the woman. She's scared to death. "Who touched His clothes? I'm unclean. I shouldn't even be here." And she turns around and she goes, "Me." And the fear falls off of her and she falls at the feet of Jesus. Now what's curious about this story is you do understand that nobody else there knows what in the world is going on. They have no clue. Everybody else is standing going, "What do you mean, who touched your clothes? Everybody touched your clothes. What is that nut doing? Did she fall out? You know, has she fainted?" And then they realize that this woman is, tears are streaming down her face, and she is fearing and knowing, and she comes and begins to tell them, and all of them are standing there going, "Ooh, what's wrong with her?" You know, they don't know what's going on. Second resolution. I want to respond to Him publicly. I want people to know, without having to guess or out having to wonder, what God has done in my life. See, I think there are a lot of benefits to that. If as Christians we just get a little bit of spine and a little bit of vocal cords and speak up. See, here's the problem I have with that. I know most of you, a lot of you, you're not football or even sports fans at all and don't care, don't know. But I'm going to talk about something here in sports that you do know, you can relate to. Tonight, in Green Bay, Wisconsin, they're going to be playing a football game. The last I heard, they're talking about the chill factor being somewhere around 20 below zero. I think the temperature itself is supposed to be like 9 below, 2 below, Caleb says. The only Packers fan on the face of the earth. Yeah. 2 below zero. Here's what I'm willing. You know, I had somebody tell me this week that a bet is not gambling because a bet's a sure thing. I don't know his word. But I'm willing to wager because I think this is a sure thing. If they show the crowd at this ball game, if they scan around the stadium, there will be at least one idiot. And I'm sorry, that's the only word I can think of that is safe enough to use in church. You know, one idiot who is sitting there in shorts and no shirt, painted green. Or used to be green before he turned blue and his fingers fell off. And they will show this man You know, I want to tell you something. There will be thousands of idiots sitting there in coats. I don't know how much tickets are. There will be thousands of idiots sitting there who paid to sit there. It with no shirt on. I just got to tell you. I just don't have that much insulation. And I have just a few more brain cells than that. I'm not going. No way. I don't know what you'd have to pay me to get me to sit there and watch that ball game. But there will be some clown sitting there with no, and everybody will know whose side he's on. He's on the side of the nut house. That's whose side he's on. Here's my simple statement. I want to resolve in my heart that every day when people come into contact with me, they know whose side I'm on. Just that simple. Just that simple. And not because I'm walking around in 9 degree below zero weather, with a cross painted on my chest. Not because I've got a fish sticker on the bumper of my car. Which I don't. I hate bumper stickers. Not because I'm walking around with my great big coffee table, King James Bible, thumping people in the back of the head. Because when they see how I live, when they see who I worship, when they see how I act, when they hear how I talk, when they see how I live, they know whose side I'm on. I want to routinely seek His presence. I want to respond to Him publicly. And the third thing, and these two kind of go together, is I want to revel in His promises. Look what Jesus says to her. Jesus says, "Daughter, your faith has made you whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague." One of the things I like about that statement is I am not a big fan, and I know this gets on the internet and all, and I know some of you, I know some, and I'm not great. I'm glad I'm not a fan of chiropractors. I'm not, for this reason. Okay, pop, snap, crackle. All right, make an appointment when you go out to come back next week. No, pop, snap, crackle, I'll call you if I need you. Same thing with dentist. On my refrigerator at home, there's a whole list of them little magnets saying your next appointment is. Fix my teeth, leave me alone. This thing of, go ahead, we'll see you back in a couple months. No, I'm sorry. I grew up, Dr. Correll was my doctor. If you need me, don't ruin me. I grew up pretty good. He brought me into this world and kept me going till he retired. There's days, I went in before can hardly walk. He'd give me a shot and I'd dance out of there. You say whatever you want to. But the thing I liked about him wasn't none of this. Go when you go out, make an appointment to come back. It was, see you. One of the things I liked about Jesus' doctor's office is he didn't have a receptionist saying, "When do you want to schedule your next appointment?" He told this woman, "Go. Go in peace. You're whole. You don't have to come back." This woman could go the rest of her life dancing and reveling in what Jesus Christ had done for her. I realize revel is not a word we use a lot. It's one of those words that typically they only use on New Year's Eve, sir, or on New Year's Eve shows coming up to midnight. So here's a word I'm going to use that some of you are going to be all right with, some of you are not going to have a clue. Here's what I'm going to say. I want to waller, not wallow. I know that's how. Waller. There's a difference. You can wallow and keep your head out of the mud. If you waller, you're always in there. I want to waller in the promises of God. He said that we are to have a peace that passes all understanding. He says that we are to have an abundant life. He says that we can come boldly before Him. I want to live my life just lapping up the promises of God. I know some of you here this morning are old enough, a lot of you are not. Some of you may not even know the song. Michael Combs sang a song a few years ago that said, "I'm drinking from my saucer because my cup's overflowing." Some of y'all don't have a clue what that's talking about, but I do. I remember my great-grandpa. We go up to Statesville, we go up there. My great-grandpa sit there at the end of the table. He'd take his cup and he would tip it over and let me a little coffee run out in the saucer so it could cool off enough that I could stand it. And I would sit there and drink out of his saucer, and I was as happy as if I had good sense. And I don't even like coffee. I want to live my life drinking out of the saucer. I want to revel in the promise. I don't want to waller in them. I just want to get them all over me. I want people to look at me and say, "What's wrong?" More than they already do. What's wrong with him? What's wrong with him? Can I tell you something? And I hadn't asked him permission, but I don't think he'll mind. Old Tommy over here is a pretty good example of that. You know, how many of you ever said, "What's wrong with him?" To be nice, Tommy, only a couple of them raised their hand. They smiled, but they wouldn't raise their hand. Tommy, what's your favorite phrase? You doing? How are you, Tommy?
Ain't nobody got as easy as me.
And you know what's bad? That nut believes that. He's not just selling you a truckload of sunshine. Tommy believes that. You want to listen? I can preach all day. You want to know what it means to revel in the promises of God? Right there's one that does it. I see him do it. He believes that mess. He believes he's got it better than anybody else. He really does. And you know what? Because he believes it, I believe he does. I want to revel in his promises. I want to routinely seek his presence. I want to respond to him publicly. I want to be living so much in his promises that others see it and ask me why. Paul says, be ready to give a reason. When somebody comes up and says, "Tommy, what's wrong with you? Well, why are you so happy even though business is bad or even though you didn't get that contract? What's wrong with you, boy?" I know what Tommy tells him. Been around him enough and heard him respond. Those are my resolutions. How about you? I want to ask you to bow your heads. You're here this morning and you say, "Jimmy, I'm a Christian. And I'll need to accept that." You know, honestly, we shouldn't have to make a special message out of that. That ought to be who we are as believers. But you need to come this morning and say, "With God's help, with God's assistance, that's who I'm going to be." Maybe one of them's one you need to work on more than the other. But I'm going to work on them. That's the person I want to be. God, help me. Help me to seek your presence. Help me to respond to you publicly. Help me to revel in your promises. That's who I want to be. You're here today and you don't know Jesus Christ. You've never accepted him as your Lord. You've been in church. You've been around church. You've brought your Bible. You know the Bible. But the fact of the matter is, you've never asked Jesus Christ into your heart. Today is the day of salvation. You need to come. Church doors open. You've been saved. You need to come. I want to make this your church home. Whatever God lays on your heart this morning, will you be obedient to him? As we